Reincarnated for Revenge. Chapter 491. You are mine now. With these thoughts in mind, Callum pulled out his phone and swiftly posted a message online. I feel as if I'm doing everything right, but my wife just doesn't seem to pay much attention to me. What should I do? Immediately, a string of responses followed below. A wealthy tycoon has appeared. Oh, my. What a surprise. It's that same tycoon again. If a woman doesn't like you, then it doesn't matter what you do because it will all be in vain anyway. Heh, women. Perhaps your perception is wrong, and you didn't actually do that well. This response made Callum raise his eyebrows. With a spirit of learning, he quickly replied, "What would be considered good, then?" He refused to believe that he couldn't make Callie fall in love with him again. Before the other party could respond, a voice suddenly echoed from behind. "What are you doing?" When Callum turned around, he saw that Callista was standing there. He quickly hid his phone, his heart brimming with surprise and joy. Could it be that Callie had actually come back to me? Yet, his face was masked with indifference. He huffed, seating himself on the bed, turning his head away from her. "Weren't you planning to run away? What are you doing coming back here?" he questioned. After he spoke, he immediately wanted to take back his words. "What nonsense am I spouting? It's rare for Callie to make the first move, so why am I being so stubborn?" As expected, Callista furrowed her brow. "So, you're saying you're not happy that I'm back?" "There's no way I wouldn't be happy." Internally, Callum was screaming in frustration, but his face remained stoic. "It doesn't matter if I like it or not. I can't force you anyway," he said, his tone subdued. Callista noticed that his expression was one of grievance, and felt a sudden impulse to pinch his cheek. By the time she came back to her senses, she had already done it. Callum sat on the bed, a frown etched onto his face as he watched her. She stood by the bed, her hands gently holding his face. In the moment their eyes met, looking into his eyes, she found herself overwhelmed with the unexpected urge to kiss him. "You," before Callum could even finish his sentence, Callista had already leaned in, kissing him softly on the lips. His lips, much like him, had a refreshing taste that was irresistible. Callista couldn't help but gently taste them, causing Callum's body to shudder, his breath hitching in an instant. A moan was heard, instantly igniting the passion within both of them. That was especially the case on such a tranquil night. In the solitude of the bedroom, next to the inviting bed, Callista suddenly yearned to unleash the beast within her. "Hold me tight, and kiss me." Her succinct response left Callum wide-eyed. Am I dreaming? In the next moment, he found himself pushed onto the bed by Callista. She propped herself up with her hands on both of his sides, her eyes hazy. As she looked at him, her cheeks flushed a rosy red. His indifferent expression was so infuriating that it made her wish she could tear apart his aloofness. She braced her hands on Callum's chest, her voice cool yet alluring as she set three ground rules. Firstly, be gentle, don't hurt me anymore. Secondly, you're not allowed to go overboard. No doing it more than three times. I have an event to attend tomorrow, and I don't want to be so worn out that I can't even walk." Before she could even say the third rule, Callum had swiftly flipped her over. His eyes were gleaming, and he looked at her with overflowing vitality in his gaze. "Thirdly, you're mine now," he said, and silenced all her unspoken words and wholeheartedly began to revel in pleasure. In fear that her previous injuries might cause her pain, he first applied some medication on her, considering it as a form of lubrication if Sean knew they were using his precious rejuvenating cream on such a spot. He would surely faint from shock. Throughout the night, Callum initially remained patient and gentle. However, after experiencing her allure, he gradually began to yearn for more. Callista had attempted to resist multiple times, only to have her attempts fall apart each time. Her intermittent moans, reminiscent of a small kitten, scratched at Callum's heart, driving him to further madness. At last, he managed to satisfy his burning lust. It was already 10 o'clock when Callista woke up the next day. It was rare for her to wake up so late, as she was accustomed to working out every morning. When she woke up, a tender kiss had already landed between her eyebrows. Callum's handsome face relaxed, his eyes, a unique shade of purple, seemed to glow as he leaned in closer, whispering softly to her, "Good morning." "You," Callista began, her eyebrows furrowing. However, she realized her voice had gone hoarse. Unable to help herself, she shot Callum a fierce glare. Underneath the quilt, her bare body was being held by him. The sensation of skin against skin and the transfer of warmth made her blush uncontrollably, and her expression became incredibly vivid. "Is your throat feeling uncomfortable?" Callum had initially wanted to tease her again, but seeing her unable to speak left him feeling slightly guilty. "I'll get you some milk." He then planted a forceful kiss on her cheek, and hurriedly donned his bathrobe before rushing downstairs. He dashed downstairs before realizing he didn't need to. He could have simply asked someone to deliver the milk upstairs. "Honestly, why have I become as impulsive as a clueless hothead?" He was about to head back with his glass of milk when he ran into Wanda. Encountering her teasing expression, Callum let out a couple of awkward coughs. "Good morning, Mom." "Morning. It's almost noon." Wanda huffed, her eyes twinkling with mirth. She leaned in close, nudging him with her elbow and asked in a teasing, mysterious tone, "Did it happen last night?" Callum remained silent, his lips pressed together. Yet, his upturned lips and his vibrant demeanor spoke volumes. Everyone knew exactly what was going on. Chapter 492. "You are the best." With a smug expression, Wanda said, "Isn't it all thanks to me? Last night, if I hadn't given Callie some advice, do you think you would have had such good luck?" Callum quickly responded, "Yes, thank you, Mom. Mom, have some milk." "That's enough," Wanda said with a hint of annoyance, "is Callie's throat feeling uncomfortable? Then she shouldn't drink milk. I've been cooking stew since this morning. You take it to her. It's the perfect time for her to have it now." "Mom, you're the best." As soon as Callum said that, he quickly handed her the milk before heading to the kitchen to prepare a bowl of stew. As he worked, he hummed a tune, signaling his good mood. At that point, everyone in Fairchild Manor knew that he was in high spirits. By the time Callum returned, Callista had fallen asleep again. She had hardly slept the previous night. After Callum had broken his celibacy, he was like a man possessed. Although she had enjoyed it, she was more exhausted afterward. Callum set the bowl aside and gently went to freshen up. After cleaning himself up, he initially planned to spend some time on his computer. However, his gaze kept involuntarily drifting toward the bed. In the end, he simply moved his computer to the bed and sat there. Drawing Callista closer to his side, Callum then reopened his laptop, finding that he could finally concentrate. He gently tapped his fingers on the computer. Every 10 minutes or so, he would go to bother Callista, touching her face and kissing her hair, as if she would melt away and disappear if he didn't touch her for a moment. As the clock slowly crept toward 11, even Callum found himself feeling a bit peckish. Naturally, he couldn't let Callista continue to sleep like that. He set his computer aside, uncovering the thermal bowl. The temperature was just right for drinking then, he went to wake Callista from her sleep. "Wake up. How about eating something before going back to sleep?" His voice was incredibly gentle, carrying a low huskiness that came from satisfaction. His voice was so tender and soothing that it could easily charm anyone who heard it. Callista furrowed her brow, burying herself into the blanket. She was so exhausted, didn't want to get out of bed, and didn't want to be disturbed anymore. "If you drink the stew, I'll stop bothering you," said Callum. Upon hearing Callum's words, Callista reluctantly opened her eyes. She sat up, picked up the bowl, and downed it in one gulp. After she had finished drinking that, she indeed wanted to fall back asleep. However, Callum stopped her. "Stop sleeping. It's lunchtime. You little lazy bones." Callista opened her eyes, glaring at him in dissatisfaction. It was as if she was saying, "You're a liar." Her sleepiness, coupled with her expressionless demeanor, was too adorable. With a mischievous glint in his eyes, Callum playfully jostled her. "Stop sleeping. Have you forgotten about the event you're supposed to attend today?" Only then did Callista manage to muster a bit of energy. Regaining her senses, she croaked, "It's all your fault. Last night, I told you to be gentle." She found herself unable to continue speaking as certain indescribable scenes filled her mind. An inexplicable blush spread across her face and neck. She was a feast for his eyes, yet he couldn't devour her. Callum kissed her, brushing his nose gently against her earlobe. He sighed and said, "Isn't it because someone is too irresistible that I lost control? Maybe if you let me indulge a few more times, I'd get it and wouldn't be so excited, used to in your dreams." Callista shot him a glance, quickly followed by a light hiss as she furrowed her brows. "You didn't hurt yourself again, did you?" Callum's face turned anxious. If she was injured again, it might mean they wouldn't be able to have sex for a long while. Callista pouted and asked, "Is there any medicated cream left?" The medicated cream was actually effective. It was just that it was used prematurely, and thus it was wasted. Callum hastily said, "There's still some left. Wait for me." He quickly fetched the medicated cream, his face filled with excitement as he exclaimed, "Let me apply the medicated cream for you." Callista watched him warily, but on second thought, she agreed. After all, he had been bullying her the previous night, so she wanted revenge. When Callum saw Callista agreed so readily, he found it somewhat peculiar. However, his inner longing was too overwhelming, so he didn't dwell on it. Because Callista forbade the removal of the blanket, Callum had no choice but to reach his hand under it, allowing her to guide his fingers as he applied the medicated cream. It wasn't particularly difficult, but the location where the medicated cream needed to be applied was quite unique. As a result, her movements seemed to carry an unexpected sensual undertone. As Callum's fingers brushed over the smooth skin of her leg, his face suddenly flushed red. "Are you feeling hot?" Callista asked in a hoarse voice. Despite her indifferent expression, her voice was particularly enticing. When certain area, a surge of heat instantly filled his heart. His fingers lingered on a "don't." "Don't try to seduce me. You do realize you're the one who'll end up losing, right?" Callum pressed his lips together, his handsome face taut, speaking with a hint of restraint. Yet, he still diligently applied the medicated cream, his eyes fixated on a spot on the quilt. He was determined not to let his mind wander to inappropriate places. When he had finally finished applying the medicated cream and was about to withdraw his hand, Callista suddenly trapped his hand with her leg. Taken aback, Callum looked up only to see Callista speaking with a half smile. "Insert your finger a little deeper. Are you always this careless when applying medicated cream?" A thin layer of sweat broke out on Callum's forehead. He was convinced that Callista was doing it on purpose. Yet, her expression at that moment was one of innocence. She looked at him and even had the audacity to blink at him. "All right, you. Let go of my hand." Callum took a deep breath, his brows furrowing slightly. He was already ready to take action, but remembering her injury, he could only recite a mantra in his mind. "I must keep my thoughts clean. I must keep my thoughts clean. I must keep my thoughts clean." Chapter 493. Skills have improved. Callista chuckled lightly, his voice dripping with languor. "You know, your skills have improved a lot from before." Last night, gasp as Callum was applying the medicated cream, his hand abruptly pressed harder. Callista let out a soft and instantly, Callum's gaze turned incredibly dangerous. "Do you want to relieve the feeling of last night?" Callista, hugging the quilt, grunted, "Come on then. Don't think I won't." Callum spoke as he burrowed into the blanket, while Callista remained utterly composed, letting him fool around under the covers without reacting in the slightest. Eventually, Callum poked his head out, his face a picture of defeat. "All right, you've won this time, but just know that I've mentally noted this down. You wait and see. Well, let's talk about it once I'm better." Seeing the frustrated expression on Callum's face, Callista finally felt a bit relieved. She got dressed and prepared to freshen up. Callum was still sitting on the bed, looking at her with a clearly displeased expression. She managed to stoke his lust but then ran off. "This little rascal is becoming more and more mischievous. Aren't you getting up? Don't you have a year-end review meeting scheduled for today?" said Callista. Callum said, "Humph. It's not a big deal. You have a meeting in the afternoon, right? I'll go with you. Last night, they spent entwined in each other's arms, basking in the peak of their intimacy. Thus, he didn't want to part from Callista for even a second, but she shot him a glare. Don't you think you're taking your role as CEO a bit too lightly if you're skipping even the year-end review meeting? Callum was just about to say something when Callista promptly insisted, "You must go. I'll be at the Congress chamber in person, with protection from various nations. Besides, I'm not the only guest attending. What's there to worry about?" After she finished talking, she went to the restroom to freshen up. When she emerged again, she was as composed as she usually was. Her black turtleneck sweater and white trench coat exuded an air of restrained elegance. Upon seeing her like that, Callum couldn't help himself. In an instant, he lunged from the bed and had her pinned against the door, where he kissed her passionately for a while. "Callie, you are so captivating. I love you so much." Even though Callum would often say such things, every time Callista heard them, she would feel her cheeks burning. Panting, she bit his lip and mumbled, "Behave yourself. If you continue like this, I'll bite through your lip for everyone to see how outrageous you are." Callum was not scared in the slightest. He tenderly lifted her chin and passionately kissed her. "Bite me like it when you leave marks on me. Why is he so?" Callista felt defeated, her body growing weak from his increasingly skillful kisses. Callum held her tightly, speaking in a muffled voice. "I want you again already. What should I do? I can't bear to be apart from you for even a second." His voice, filled with a sense of injustice, sounded as if someone was trying to tear them apart. Nonplussed, Callista wrapped her arms around his waist, suddenly finding a surge of patience. "All right, we have plenty of time." Callum's eyes lit up as he intently gazed at her. "I haven't asked you something yet. Did you come back last night because you agreed to marry me?" Callista glanced at him, feigning nonchalance as she said, "I'm merely giving you an opportunity. If you want to marry me, keep trying. One chance is enough." Callum held her face and passionately planted a kiss on her lips. "I feel incredibly happy right now. Callie, thank you." "Idiot. Why is he thanking me?" Callista chuckled with a pursed smile. "Go change your clothes. It's time to eat." "Yes, my queen." During mealtime, Wanda watched them with a teasing expression. Yet, Callum carried on as if he hadn't noticed anything, constantly filling Callista's bowl with food. Callista, on the other hand, felt somewhat embarrassed and kept her head down, not daring to meet Wanda's gaze throughout the meal. The medicated cream from Sean was indeed effective. After applying it, her pain significantly subsided, leaving her only feeling a bit weak. After the meal, Callum advised Callista to rest a bit more before he headed to the office. That day was the final meeting of the new year, where various summaries and reports were to be discussed. After its conclusion, many were set to go on vacation, making that a crucial gathering. After Callum left, Wanda hurriedly leaned in to ask Callista, "How did things go between you and Callum?" Callista coughed twice, her cheeks flushing slightly as she spoke. "We went with the flow." "Huh? All right, going with the flow is good. You've no idea how cunty your relationship is, Callie. I am to see how great you two's. She paused for a moment before adding, your mother, wherever she is in the heavens, would surely be delighted to see that you've finally found your happiness. The smile on Callista's lips was somewhat faint. Happiness. Can I truly possess it? Her state of mind gradually became more serene, and her smiles became more frequent. She was no longer like before, wishing death upon all those who had hurt her. She didn't even seek out those perverted researchers. She had changed, and she wondered if she could find happiness in that way. Looking into Wanda's trusting eyes, Callista nodded emphatically. I will definitely find happiness. Perhaps I should have faith in myself and give life another chance. At that moment, Wanda was on the verge of tears. You will. With that delightful mood, Callista, upon receiving an invitation from Congress, made her way to the Congress chamber. At that time, the primary attendees were renowned doctors from various countries, as it was a professional gathering. Therefore, no other personnel were invited, and Callista went alone. Chapter 494. Who would dare the Congress? Chamber had long been packed with people. A lengthy red carpet was rolled out, and the medical powerhouses who arrived were all highly esteemed. Thus, even though they weren't celebrities walking down the red carpet, they attracted more attention than stars. Numerous television stations were broadcasting the event live, allowing the whole world to witness that grand spectacle. As Callista was preparing to leave the car, Quintus voiced his concerns with a hint of unease. The bodyguards and others aren't allowed to enter, Ms. Callista. Please be extra careful when you go in. If something seems amiss, seek out security from the Congress chamber. I'll be there immediately. Callista was slightly unnerved by his words, yet she managed a smile. I'm hardly someone of importance. Besides, who would dare to make a move in a place like this? Quintus thought, that's true. Considering that Congress has the backing of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, ordinary people indeed won't dare to make a move. All right, Ms. Callista. I'll wait for you outside. Go ahead. I wish you all the best. Callista nodded, then stepped out of the car. As soon as she did, reporters swarmed her like bees to honey, including a significant number of foreign journalists. They were all there for one reason, which was to interview Callista. She was so mysterious, the world was eager to learn more about her. Had it not been for the security guards surrounding her, providing a bit of breathing space, Callista might have been overwhelmed by the reporters the moment she appeared. For the first time, Callista distinctly felt the weight of her newfound fame. All she could do was flash a polite smile to the crowd, then quicken her pace. Ms. Stafford, during the new year, thousands of patients wanted to hold a small appreciation ceremony for you. Will you be attending? What's your next target, Ms. Stafford? Will you continue your research in virology? Ms. Stafford, you appear quite joyful. Are good things on the horizon? How are things going with Mr. Callum? There are rumors about a celebrity claiming to be Mr. Callum's sugar baby. Is there any truth to this? The questions that followed gradually began to veer toward Callista's personal life. After all, compared to international media, the domestic press was more interested in her romantic gossip. Throughout the event, Callista remained silent. However, due to the overwhelming number of people who wanted to interview her, her journey outside the venue was arduous. Just then, a sudden twist occurred. Someone fired three shots into the air, and upon hearing the sound, the reporters instinctively swarmed forward. The bodyguards protecting Callista were caught off guard and were scattered by the crowd. "There's a killer on the loose." Upon hearing someone shout, everyone in the outer perimeter instantly became tense. Someone fired at the bodyguards, who retaliated while simultaneously shielding Callista. However, the crowd was too large. As soon as the commotion began, the four bodyguards were unable to keep track of Callista, nor could they fully monitor her movements. At that moment, a smoke bomb was thrown, shrouding the entire red carpet area in a thick haze. By the time Quintus and his men managed to fight their way through the crowd, Callista had already vanished. In a sudden rush, Callum bolted upright and dashed out, leaving the board members exchanging puzzled glances, clueless about what had just transpired. Previously, while others were talking, Callum was half-heartedly listening. In reality, his attention was entirely focused on the live stream playing on his phone. Watching Callista descend the car with such calm composure filled him with immense pride. However, upon witnessing the sudden chaos, he immediately became restless. It was clear that the other party was targeting Callista. "Seal off all traffic around the entire Congress chamber. We absolutely cannot let that group escape." After Callum issued the command, a lockdown was imposed on all surrounding streets. Meanwhile, when the Speaker of the Congress, Ethan, heard of Callista's disappearance, he broke out in a cold sweat. His voice trembled as he gritted his teeth. "Just great. Of all the people who could go missing, why did it have to be Callista? Now, Mr. Callum is surely going to lose his mind." A staff member beside him hung up the phone, his face pale as he spoke. "He's lost his mind. He's blocked off all the roads around the area. Now, many people in the vicinity can't return home. What are we supposed to do now?" Ethan felt his knees buckle, wiping the sweat off his forehead. "Let's ignore that for now. You all go and soothe the other guests first. Someone, go and ask if Callista has been found or if there are any clues to her whereabouts. You all quickly think about what to do when Mr. Callum arrives later." At that time, Callista was bound and stowed away in the back seat of the car. Her head was shrouded in a black cloth, and she was draped in a long, black garment. Someone had attempted to ambush her in the midst of previous chaos. Acting on instinct, she retaliated, and the individual who tried to capture her was effectively neutralized by her counterattack. Seeing that she wasn't easy to deal with, the opponent promptly threw a smoke bomb. Furthermore, two skilled fighters attacked her at the same time. She was at a disadvantage, unable to fend off two opponents. In the end, she was captured. She wasn't seized by someone from her own country but by a foreigner. After she was captured, they drugged her. Then, they callously tossed her onto the back seat of a decrepit car and bagged her face. However, her unique constitution delayed the drug's effect, so she was still relatively lucid. Thus, the issue she was facing was how she was going to release herself from the ropes. As she was deep in thought, the car suddenly braked, almost throwing her off her seat. From up ahead, the voice of a heavily bearded man cursing drifted toward her. He was speaking in Euronian, but his accent was thick, clearly foreign. Damn it. Since when did the government start moving so quickly? The kidnappers' planned escape route was abruptly blocked, causing them to panic. They had no choice but to detour, only to find that all passages were blocked and cars were being thoroughly inspected. The driver was getting a bit flustered, wiping his sweat repeatedly. His hands gripping the steering wheel were slightly unsteady. "It's not like I kidnapped the president's daughter, so why is the search so intense? What is going on with the backup? Why haven't they come to my aid yet?" Chapter 495. Human Traffickers. In a rush, the driver swerved the car onto a side street. However, the steepness of the narrow lane made him anxious. In his carelessness, he collided with a small truck. To make matters worse, after the collision, his car's wheel got stuck in a pothole. Despite stepping on the accelerator several times, he couldn't pull out, indicating that something must have been damaged in the crash. He forcefully slapped the steering wheel, cursing under his breath, "D**MN." After that, he picked up a gun and went out. There were two individuals in the truck. The bearded man, Victor, approached the truck. The two people in the truck hadn't even uttered a word before they found themselves at gunpoint. "You, head to my vehicle and move that woman into the back of your vehicle. Behave yourself, or I'll shoot." Victor spoke Chinakan rather fluently. The two shared a glance, realizing they had met a tough nut. The driver raised his hands, daring not to make a move, while the other quickly got out of the car to move Callista. Those two individuals were human traffickers on the verge of reaching their hideout when such an event occurred. They certainly wanted to flee, be if Victor took down their license plate number and alerted the authorities, it wouldn't bode well. Little did they know they'd encounter a terrifying foreigner who was clearly no saint. If they had known, they would have fled sooner. The man assigned to move Callista caught sight of her as soon as he opened the car door. A sense of curiosity led him to lift the cloth covering Callista's head. Confused and uncertain of the situation, Callista decided to stay still and not react. "D**MN. This woman is seriously attractive." The man spoke, sizing up Callista with a quick glance. He noticed that Victor would have a hard time spotting him because the small car was hidden behind the truck. Thus, gritting his teeth, he swiftly stripped off Callista's black outerwear and darted behind the truck. When he opened the cargo compartment, there was another woman inside. The man draped the black cloth over the other woman, obscuring her face as well, then dashed forward, pleading, "Sir, I've done as you asked. Can you let my little brother go now? I promise I won't say a word." Victor initially planned to kill the two individuals outright, but then a car was approaching. He was startled and said to the guy in the truck's driver's seat, "I'm taking the car. Get out quickly." The man in the driver's seat quickly left. As soon as Victor entered, he glanced through the rear window, spotting the bound woman. He breathed a sigh of relief. His foot pressed onto the accelerator, and he sped off as though ghosts were chasing him. "Daniel, we're in trouble now. We haven't even had this car for long. Samuel Hundeeman said bitterly. By the way, did you manage to move the goods from the car? To his surprise, his brother spoke mysteriously. Don't fret over the car and the goods when we're going to make it big. As he spoke, he led Samuel to the car previously occupied by Victor. Upon opening the car door, they saw Callista lying there, seemingly in slumber. Her hair was disheveled, her state slightly disarrayed, but it did nothing to diminish her beauty. Damn. Drool unnoetically dien in from Samuel E. Mouth there an I.E. stun a note she'll definitely fetch a good price. Daniel Hundeeman said with satisfaction, sell? If we auction this woman off to Drawbridge, we won't have to worry about our livelihood for the rest of our lives. The only question is whether she's untouched or not. Upon hearing that, Samuel was instantly thrilled, yet he was still somewhat frightened due to the recent threat of a gun. Daniel, you secretly switched the woman. What if the guy from earlier comes looking for Liz? Humph, you can tell that guy is no good at first glance. Anyway, let's get the car out of here and take her back to hideout before we discuss anything else. All right, I'll push it now. Meanwhile, Victor had finally found the person who was supposed to meet him. Why did you just get here? He questioned the petite figure in front of him as soon as he departed from the truck. The woman with the hat looked up, revealing Quincy's face. She said urgently, "It's all because of you. Why did you suddenly change cars? I've been searching for you for ages." Victor scratched his nose, recounting the events that had transpired on the road. Quincy was taken aback. "Where is she?" "You have her, right?" "She's at the back," replied Victor. Quincy nodded. "Hurry up, move her into my car. The whole area is under lockdown. We need to be quick." "Darn it. If I don't know better, I'd think I'd kidnapped the president's daughter." As Victor spoke, he moved toward the back to carry the veiled woman, clad in black, out. With just one glance, Quincy froze. She realized that the person Victor was carrying was not Callista at all. How could this be? If Callista hadn't been kidnapped, the Fairchild family wouldn't have been so infuriated. At that moment, her mind raced at lightning speed. By that point, she was already deep in trouble. If she didn't think fast, it would be the end of her. "Hold on." He mentioned he bumped into someone on Blossom Grove Road. Could it be that those two people knew Callista and happened to rescue her? If that's the case, what's the story with this extra woman, then? Quincy was momentarily confused, but one thing was crystal clear to her. If Victor didn't have Callista, there was absolutely no need for her to risk her life having him by her side. She knew she had to and figure things out and couldn't risk revealing herself. Seeing that Quincy was still not getting in the car, Victor impatiently urged, "Are you coming or not?" At that critical moment, Quincy quickly came up with a plan and said, "You go first. I'll take this truck and destroy it, covering your escape." Victor cursed in his mind about how women were such a nuisance. He didn't think much about Quincy's command. After all, as long as Callista was with him, it didn't matter where Quincy went because the latter would need to come back to him. It was unfortunate that he couldn't realize how wrong he was. Chapter 496. Callista was cunning. In fact, he was glad that Quincy was willing to do that for him and alleviated some of his stress. He was kind of panicking and not thinking straight because the Fairchild family was applying much pressure on him. After the two of them went their separate ways, Quincy was trembling as she drove the truck back to Psalm Grove Road. Her journey, she was stopped and questioned. She initially thought that the truck's original owner had reported it stolen. However, it turned out that they were looking for Callista. When they didn't see her, they let Quincy go. Quincy found that very strange. Did the truck's owner not report it missing? Then, she thought of something and grinned. It seems the truck's owners aren't good people, either. However, Callista is cunning, and the average person will likely be unable to control her. I must find her first. Fortunately, over the past couple of years, she had been quite sociable and had made numerous acquaintances from all walks of life. Without hesitation, she called a local tyrant, speaking with a sweet smile. Mitchell, it's been a while. You're asking. Oh, when can we catch up? No, I actually want to ask you something today. Have you seen a pair of brothers around Blossom Grove Road? Yeah, they're skinny, dark, skinned, and quite short. I'm certain they're not up to any good. Upon hearing the response from the other end, Quincy laughed in delight. They're human traffickers, huh? That's good news. Can you tell me where they live? Following the directions she was given, Quincy found herself at what seemed to be an ordinary farmhouse. After comparing it with the address she had, it appeared that was indeed the place she was told about. She felt as if the heavens were helping her. In her quest for revenge against Callista, she went to great lengths to connect with a mafia organization in Danantend. The leader of that organization was in the late stages of liver cancer. Despite seeking help from many, he was told there was no hope for him. Thus, Quincy fervently suggested Callista as a potential savior. In order to secure a meeting with that leader, she slept with several men. Fortunately, her efforts were not in vain. The leader, finally persuaded, expended significant effort to travel to Chania to capture Callista. She initially didn't want to get involved. However, the mafia boss insisted, stating that since she was the one who picked Callista, it was her responsibility to bring the latter back. If anything went wrong, she would undoubtedly meet her end. The big fuss that the Fairchild family made had taken her by surprise. She was contemplating an exit surprise strategy when, as if the heavens were on her side, she was graced with such a plating an exit at that time, the Fairchild family was blocking every path. Even if the mafia group had planned meticulously, there was no way they could escape. However, they could help her divert attention and firepower. Even if they were caught, Callista was not in their possession. By the time the Fairchild family came to their senses, Callista would have already been taken far away. When Quincy's train of thought ended there, she smiled and knocked on the door. The two brothers, who were frantically searching for the auction contact information at home, were startled. Initially, they planned to pretend no one was home, but the relentless knocking forced Daniel to answer the door reluctantly. "Who are you?" He had only cracked open the door slightly, warily eyeing the woman outside. With a slight smile, Quincy took off her hat and declared, "I'm the one who's here to bring you money." Startled, Daniel looked at Quincy as she spoke. "Do you have any idea who you've kidnapped? Judging by your country, bumpkin demeanor, I doubt you do. Did you wonder why there are so many police officers searching outside? They are all looking for the woman you've kidnapped." Quincy's words left him flustered and disoriented. He stammered, "I don't know what you're talking about. There's no one here you're looking for." Quincy quickly stopped him from closing the door. Lowering her voice, she said, "Daniel, let's not beat around the bush. Mitchell sent me to find you. Aren't you going to let me in?" Upon hearing Quincy mention Mitchell's name, Daniel gritted his teeth and let her in. Quincy, somewhat impatient, said, "Take me to see her." Daniel nodded toward Samuel, who led Quincy to a secret room downstairs. Upon hearing the approaching footsteps, Callista quickly shut her eyes. "You just tied her up like that?" questioned Quincy. Upon hearing Quincy's voice, Callista felt her heart sank slightly. Daniel said, "Don't worry, this woman was drugged and tied up. She's not going anywhere." Only then did Quincy nod, her expression stern as she fixed her gaze on Callista. "Do you know who she is?" At that point, even Daniel felt as though he had kidnapped a very important person. After all, when he had tried to make a call, not a single person answered. It was as if all the big shots in Horrington had vanished into thin air. Initially, he didn't connect that to Callista, but when Quincy showed up, he understood the situation immediately. "Who is she? A big time celebrity?" "We don't really watch television," asked Daniel. Quincy shook her head, sneering, "All you need to know is that even if you hand her over now, you'll still end up rotting in jail." "What should we do then?" The Hundeman brothers suddenly became anxious. Daniel said, "I didn't mean any harm. I was only admiring her beauty." "So you swapped her with the woman you originally abducted? You're quite daring." Quincy scoffed, "What were you planning to do after capturing her? Sell her off at an auction, her slip through my fingers, can I? I've even lost a car because of her." Quincy said, "Don't worry, I brought your car back for you." Daniel's eyes lit up as Quincy continued, "I want you to sell her to the most rural and impoverished area possible." Chapter 497. 5 million. Samuel looked at Callista, his face filled with reluctance as he spoke. "I don't think it's a good idea. This young lady is too beautiful to be sold off to those mountain people. It's such a waste. Besides, we wouldn't even get much money selling her to them, and the risk we're taking is huge." Quincy's face grew fierce. "What, you feel sorry for her? If you don't sell her to the mountains, she'll definitely escape. When that happens, it'll be your end." As for the money, she glanced at her phone, checking her account balance. She had over 5 million in cash remaining. With gritted teeth, she poured it all in. "I have 5 million here. That should be enough compensation for you two, right?" The pair wore expressions of surprise and delight. "Really? If we do as you say, you'll give us 5 million. Quincy nodded. "This is an extremely profitable deal. If you sell her to people in urban areas, your risk is greater. However, if you sell to rural areas, people wouldn't even be able to find her. You'd be safe. Daniel's eyes flickered. But you said this person is formidable, and everyone outside is searching for her. How do we extricate ourselves? Quincy sneered, her eyes filled with smugness. Normally, I wouldn't really know what to do, but now, there's an incredible opportunity. The mafia gang from Danantand had put a lot of effort into kidnapping Callista and split into several groups and routes. If the land route were blocked, they would take the waterway. If the waterway were inaccessible, they would take the airway. They even had dedicated personnel providing cover. Even if Callum had summoned all the police in Horrington to block them, they would still be short-handed. All Quincy had to do was wait. Once the Fairchild family clashed with the mafia gang and the latter was cornered, her group would surface. When that happened, the Fairchild family's forces would be there to block them. When that time came, it would be Quincy's turn to act. She believed with that tactic, she and the other two would surely be able to escape from the impenetrable city. Every time Quincy thought about what would happen to Callista in the future, she felt a sense of satisfaction. It wasn't that she didn't want to kill Callista or that she didn't want those two detestable men to take advantage of Callista. She was simply afraid that by focusing on the immediate gains, she might miss the best opportunity to escape. After all, if Callista was sold off to some remote mountainous village, she was bound to face all sorts of awful situations. Thus, Quincy believed there was nothing she should be anxious about. With that thought, she took her phone and moved aside to wait for a message. She then addressed the restless Hundeeman brothers. This woman isn't a virgin anymore. You guys can have her if you want, but not right now. Don't worry. Once we leave Horrington, you can do whatever you want with her. When the brothers heard that, they finally set aside their hesitations. They obeyed Quincy's instructions and hurried off to their tasks. Quincy held her phone in anticipation. Her phone was connected with those in Danantand. In other words, whatever the situation was with the people dispatched, one phone call and everyone involved would be informed. Callista living a life worse than death. Thus, she believed everything she did was worth it. She was already in hell, so she wanted her enemy to join her. Callum had extracted information from the two individuals he had apprehended through rigorous interrogation. Eventually, he found out Callista's approximate location. Moreover, he had their cell phones, giving him instant access to the movements of others. From that point onward, it was clear that capturing the rest of the mafia gang was only a matter of time. Yet, something didn't sit right with him. He turned to Quintus and asked, "Have you found out how many are there on the other side?" The search revealed that there were 8 groups of people, each heading in a different direction. The informant likely didn't lie, and most of them were decoys to create confusion. Only the vehicle heading farthest south is the real one. With a stern expression, Callum gritted his teeth and commanded, "Dispatch everyone we have at our disposal. Take them down one by one. Whoever finds Callie first, report back immediately." "All right, I'll go immediately." Quintus accepted the order and left. Meanwhile, Callum was distraught and couldn't help but consider other possibilities. Let's assume this mafia gang is working with someone else. On the surface, they seemed to be one group, but secretly there was another. Maybe the secret group is waiting for me to exhaust my manpower so they can break out from the encirclement? With those thoughts in mind, his fingers traced and scribbled over the map. Finally, he declared in a deep voice, "Gunner. Mr. Callum, please give your instructions. The lockdown has now been lifted. If Callie is still in this region, those who kidnapped her will certainly seize the opportunity to move her when everyone is out. Therefore, ask those who remain to keep a close watch on this area and report any abnormalities immediately." Affirmative. After a while, Quinta suddenly spoke through the communication device. "Mr. Callum, we've located the car. There's someone in the back seat. However, upon finding it, we were suddenly ambushed by a multitude of adversaries. We need backup." Callum hastily sat up. Under normal circumstances, he wouldn't have been so agitated. However, the ambush indicated to him that the person he was looking for must be in that car. "I'm coming, Callista." Callum hurriedly drove off, his people converging in that particular area. After a chaotic skirmish in the suburbs, they narrowly managed to stop a vehicle that was about to board a ship. "Gang." After the skirmish was over, Callum managed to capture a total of 12 individuals from the mafia when he arrived. The last man, Victor, had surrendered, stepping out from the vehicle with his hands raised in defeat. In the back seat of the car was a person who was tied up. Her face wasn't clearly visible when seen through the car window, but it was evident that she was a woman. Chapter 498. This is not her. Meanwhile, Quincy had found the perfect opportunity to escape and hastily said, "Now is the time. Let's go." Daniel hoisted Callista onto his shoulders and loaded her into the car. Callista was fully conscious, but due to her unique physical condition, the effects of the drug began to take hold, leaving her unable to resist. Normally, her unique physical abilities often came to her aid. However, at that time, they were the very reason she found herself unable to escape from the clutches of a few ordinary people. Meanwhile, Callum, full of anticipation, opened the car door. However, before he could even remove the bag on the woman's head, his expression changed dramatically. "This isn't her. How can it not be Callie? Where is she?" With a grit of his teeth, he swiftly turned and kicked Victor. "Where is she?" Knowing he was cornered, Victor decided to be honest in hopes of a more lenient treatment. He confessed, "She's at the back of the car." Callum narrowed his eyes, leading the woman from the back seat. He removed the bag from her head and asked solemnly, "Is this the person you've captured?" With a steady gaze, Victor looked as if he had seen a ghost. "No, it wasn't her I captured. How did it suddenly become someone else?" Callum, having reached the limit of his patience, gave Victor another kick. He handed over the unconscious stranger to someone else, hauling Victor up by the collar of his shirt with one hand. At that moment, it seemed like there was a fire burning in his eyes. "I'm asking you once more." Callum cocked his gun, pointing it at Victor's head, and asked, "Where is the person I'm looking for?" Victor was so frightened by the palpable murderous intent radiating from Callum that his face turned pale. His mind froze for a moment, but he quickly understood the situation. "I know. I think I know. Earlier, I collided with a truck on the road. D**MNIT, I was duped. It was all because he had been too anxious at that time. The truck had obstructed his view, and he hadn't expected to collide with a human trafficker. Coincidentally, the trafficker had a woman who could be used for a switcheroo." Callum narrowed his eyes, forcefully handing Victor over to his subordinates. "Find out who he hit and where it happened. The rest of you follow me." At that moment, his phone rang. It was none other than Gunnar on the line. "Mr. Callum, in the area I'm overseeing, a truck left at an unusually high speed. It seems a bit suspicious." "Immediately," Callum commanded, "send someone after them. I'd rather make a mistake than let anyone escape." "Understood. Ms. Wolford, you mentioned selling to the poorer people, but those places are quite impoverished. Does it mean any remote and destitute area will suffice?" When Daniel asked that, he was trying to gauge if he could sell at a closer range so that he could make a quick escape. His plan was to slip out of the country with his younger brother. Quincy discerned his intentions and spoke grimly. "You need to sell her farther away. The more remote, the better. Also, make sure to sell it to a place known for its harsh customs, especially those who enjoy mistreating women." Her words were laden with intense hatred, causing discomfort to anyone who heard them. However, Daniel, a man of worldly experiences, merely glanced at Quincy, speaking in a hushed tone. "I know of a place, deep within the mountains, so isolated that there are no roads. Access is only possible with the help of donkeys. The male population there heavily outweighs the female to the extent that there are hardly any women at all. As a result, any woman who is brought there is first passed around among the village men until she is driven to insanity." Quincy's eyes sparkled, yet she couldn't help but ask, "Why would they want to drive the women insane?" Daniel chuckled deeply. "If she's insane, she won't run. Besides, all they want from her is to bear children. They don't need her to do laundry, cook, or even think. Plus, if everyone has had a turn with her, even if the police look for her, every household will hide her. The police won't be able to find her at all. Any woman who enters can't leave for the rest of her life." "Great. Perfect." Quincy's face flushed with excitement. "Sell her there. That's truly an amazing place." The two brothers didn't say a word, merely exchanging a smile, but in their minds, they were both a bit taken aback. They thought their human trafficking business was already ruthless enough, yet Quincy of pity proved to be even more maniacal. Indeed, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. They felt a pang for the woman in the back. They thought, "She is so beautiful, but her life is about to be ruined. Before selling her, we must definitely have a nice time with her." After regaining consciousness, Callista faintly heard their conversation in the background, which startled her. She tried to bite her own tongue with great effort, but due to her numbed body, she had no strength. Even biting her tongue brought no pain. Of course, she couldn't let that plan proceed. If she were truly sold to such a place, she would rather have been dead. Hence, she repeatedly bit her own tongue as her eyes constantly darted around, forcing herself to stay alert. During that process, she experienced a feeling she had never felt before when faced with danger. It was fear. At the same time, a thought that would never have surfaced in her mind before began to form, which was anticipation. She was certain he would definitely come to rescue her and was looking forward to it. Darn it, we've been targeted. Someone's chasing us from behind. Samuel, who was driving, suddenly spoke with a sense of urgency. Upon hearing that, Quincy was so frightened that she turned pale. We can't let them catch us, or we're done for. Chapter 499. Daniel wavers. As Samuel picked up the pace, he spat out in anger, "Didn't you say all the cops had? Are we still being chased? Gone elsewhere?" Why, Daniel was also glaring at Quincy. "Aren't you going to tell us who exactly we've captured?" Quincy gritted her teeth and spoke up. "The one at the back, Callista Stafford, is the very same person who's been the talk of the town lately for conquering the K-virus." Daniel was completely taken aback. Not because of Callista's reputation, but because he had heard that she was the renowned future lady of the Fairchild family. Of course, he also knew about what the Fairchild family was. They were legitimate arms dealers and usually beyond the reach of normal people. Therefore, how could Daniel not panic when he realized he had kidnapped the fiancée of the head of the largest family in the world? "I must have lost my mind." Daniel paled. Seeing him waver, Quincy gave him a firm slap. "Do you really plan on giving her back?" The two brothers remained silent while Quincy spoke through gritted teeth. "Do you really believe that returning her now will absolve you of all consequences? The Fairchild family will definitely not let you off the hook." She paused for a moment. "Anyway, we only have one car tailing us right now. You guys know the roads well, so just shake them off." She forced herself to remain calm, yet her gaze grew increasingly crazy. "Do you think you have many chances to catch Callista? Without a stroke of luck, you can't even come close to her. Now, she's practically fallen into your lap. It's like hitting the jackpot. What are you hesitating for? Sell her, and the $5 million is all yours. When the time comes, she won't be able to escape. Even if she does, you'll be long gone, and no one will be the wiser." "But she's still from the Fairchild family," said Daniel. "So what?" Quincy gritted her teeth and laughed, her face twisted with emotion. "You've come this far. Do you really think there's a way back for you? Hurry up and shake them off." Upon hearing her words, the two brothers gradually calmed down. Indeed, they had committed countless heinous acts over the years. Being captured would mean a dead end for them anyway, so they might as well take a gamble and flee with the money. "Samuel, let's take the Quilton Lane. There are many side roads there. We can lose them there," said Daniel. Samuel replied, "All right." Thus, the speed of the small truck increased. As they continued their journey, their vehicle gradually increased its distance from the pursuers. The night was dark and the road was lined with numerous trees. Coupled with their unfamiliarity with the road conditions and the many forks along the way, Quincy and her group had to exert a great deal of effort to shallow off the anthianal. However, it wasn't over yet, and Quincy knew that. Once they were targeted, the Fairchild family would undoubtedly send more people after them. Thus, she made a snap decision. "We've come all the way to this remote location. You two should have a way to move the hostages, right? Ditch the car. We will proceed on foot for the rest of the journey. Abandon the car." Daniel voiced his dissatisfaction. "We're still half an hour away by car from our destination. Why should we leave the car now when we've already shaken off the people following us?" Quincy just kept shaking her head. "You don't understand," her voice was thick with jealousy. "You guys don't understand the extent to which Callum would go for her. He'd rather make a mistake than let her slip through his fingers. Now that we've shaken them off, he's sure to send even more people after us. Anyway, when the time comes, you'll have 5 million. What kind of car wouldn't you be able to buy?" The expressions of the two brothers also became grim. After all, it wasn't the police who were after them but the Fairchild family. Though unwilling, they had to abandon the car. Additionally, Quincy's guess was spot on. Among all the suspicious vehicles the Fairchild family sent to chase, that was the only one they couldn't catch. Hence, that car immediately drew all of Callum's attention, prompting him to take a flight over right away. At that time, Daniel was carrying Callista on his back, navigating through the mountains with Samuel and Quincy. Samuel said, "Let's go this way. There's a concealed cave over here. It was dug through and used for hiding people." Quincy felt as if the heavens were assisting her. She had encountered two seasoned human traffickers. Thus, even if Callum had exceptional skills, trying to find them in the vast expanse of the mountainous area would be like searching for a needle in a haystack. After all, a crafty person had more than one hideout, and all of them were hidden in dark corners unseen by most people. The jostling had brought Callista back to a clearer state of consciousness. She cautiously tugged at the ropes binding her but found them unyielding. Whoever had tied her up had done so with professional skill, using no ordinary rope. Hence, she wondered if she was left with no choice but to wait for Callum to rescue her. The group trekked through the mountains for hours, not daring to pause. In just a short while, numerous planes had flown ahead of them. The secluded mountain road, which should have been scarcely treaded, suddenly saw an increase in traffic. That forced them to tread carefully within the mountains, not daring to show themselves. At last, they found the person who was supposed to meet them. The man was a pretty boy, Cody. Upon seeing Quincy, he furrowed his brow. "Are you here for a picnic? Why did you bring your lover along?" Quincy felt a wave of revulsion. She glanced at Daniel, a man who was old, unattractive, and poor. She was appalled and insulted that Cody would think such a man was her lover. However, she was dependent on Cody at the moment, which was why she held her tongue. Daniel was so flustered from being pursued that he had no mental space for anything else. He quickly said, "Hurry, lead us into the village. I'll pay you handsomely once this is over." As he spoke, he gave a casual wave of his hand, and in an instant, Cody's eyes lit up. Chapter 500. A deal was made. 50,000. Cody shook his head. "No, I can't. We're not taking any jobs recently, for some reason, there's been an influx of strangers in town all of a sudden." My boss said someone important from Horrington has gone missing, and they're searching everywhere for that person. We've been warned not to accept any work. Otherwise, if anything goes wrong, we'll all be in deep trouble. Having finished speaking, he glanced at the woman on Daniel's back, her head covered. He then jokingly said, "I heard that a woman is missing. Could it be the one you're carrying?" The Hundeman brothers instantly grimaced, though their cover was maintained due to the veil of night. Then Daniel spoke. "No way. If I had such ability, I would have been out enjoying my freedom long ago, not hiding in this forest." Flat rate. 100,000. All you have to do is guide the way. This amount of money could buy you a wife. His offer had Cody itching with anticipation. He couldn't help but exclaim, "Daniel, you're about to strike it rich, aren't you?" Daniel said, "More or less, yeah. I was planning to retire after this last deal, but who knew such a thing would happen? Things are getting dangerous, or else I wouldn't be in such a hurry to get rid of this good. If I were to be wrongly arrested, I'd be stuck in jail for life." Hearing Daniel say that, Cody felt a bit relieved. So he's afraid of being implicated in this mess. That's why he's in such a rush to deal with the goods in his hands. Makes sense. Well, 100,000 is indeed a significant amount. He rubbed his chin and spoke. "Deal? Follow me. I assure you won't get caught." There were towns within the vast mountains, but if one only traveled through the mountain paths without entering those towns, their destination would become unclear. That region was famously known for its towering mountains and winding paths. Without a guide, it was easy to lose one's way, a stark contrast to the other mountains outside. Even the most formidable human traffickers, when they ventured into the mountainous area, had no choice but to pay the toll dutifully. That was the rule. Seeing how adept those people were, Callista understood that she had stumbled upon seasoned professionals. However, she didn't wake up. If she did, they would force her to move on, and by staying unconscious, she was able to buy herself some time. Moreover, being carried by someone allowed her to regulate her breathing, and with a bit more time, she could metabolize the drug in her system. On the pitch, Black Mountain Road, the group dared not use any form of light, so they blindly navigated through the wilderness. Suddenly, Quincy spoke up. "Why hasn't she woken up yet? Could she be pretending to be asleep?" With a grunt, Daniel remarked, "I'm an old hand, and I can easily tell if someone's genuinely awake or just pretending. Enough with the idle chatter. We need to get a move on." Quincy pursed her lips, glancing at Cody, who was leading the way. She moved closer to Samuel, lowering her voice to say, "I know you're an old hand too, but don't underestimate this woman. Any woman who can firmly hold the heir of the Fairchild family in the palm of her hand is no simple character." "You're right." Upon hearing that, Samuel walked over, gently lifted Callista's eyelids, and pinched her soft flesh. Discovering that her body was completely relaxed, he finally spoke. "She's still out. The medicine that the foreigner gave her really did the trick. She's totally unconscious. At this rate she might sleen." Chapter 500. A deal was made through the entire day. "That's great." Quincy felt relieved. A day later, once they brought Callista to the village, everything would be settled. She planned to lay low abroad for a while once it was done. When the dust had settled, she would return to witness the outcome of Callista's situation. "We've been traveling for so long. How much further until we reach our destination?" Quincy had probably never experienced such hardship before. Every once in a while, people would come searching in the mountains. If it weren't for the group's familiarity with the terrain and their ability to hide in mountain crevices and secret paths, they would have been caught long ago. Cody said, "What a nuisance. We're almost there, but it seems like the village ahead is blocked off by someone." This forsaken place hadn't seen a stranger for the past 800 years, yet now so many have arrived. The women brought there are bound to stir up trouble again. "Don't worry, they are quite good at hiding people. They'll be fine," Daniel said with a hint of unease. Cody didn't overthink, leading Daniel and his crew on a detour. The day had grown cold, and after a morning spent on the move, they had no choice but to sit down for a rest and hydrate. Cody stole a glance at his silenced phone during a lull. He wished he hadn't because the sight nearly made him jump. DMN, over 100 missed calls. What happened? Was there a house fire or something? He was so scared that he hurriedly returned the call. The person on the other end answered immediately, not even waiting for a second. They started by asking, "Cody, did you bring Daniel with you?" Upon hearing, Cody noticed that Daniel and his crew were engrossed in their meal. He discreetly distanced himself before pleading with a desperate look on his face. "Boss, I didn't mean to bring people into the mountains. However, Daniel gave me 100,000. How about I give you 50,000? As soon as he said that, the person on the other end of the phone was taken aback, almost fainting. "100,000? You're courting death." Cody's boss no longer had the energy to hurl insults. After a long pause, he finally spoke in a weak and breathless manner. "I don't care how you do it, but you must immediately distance yourself from them." "Never mind, it's too late for that now. The police are already onto you. If it comes to it, hand him over. Yes, you might end up in jail, but it's better than losing your life. Don't worry, we'll look after your home. As long as you don't betray us, our organization will provide your family with 200,000 in support. If you refuse, then you might as well be dead."